Namaskar and welcome to Radio Eka. My name is Shruti Deora.
And my name is Priyanka.
And we are your hosts for the Radio Eka podcast.
Eka is a place to learn Yoga Nidra, Pranayama, and meditations from India. We have a mobile app and we also offer daily meditation classes on Zoom. If you want to try the app or join our classes, please check out our website, www.ekameditation.com, or just check the show notes.
Namaskar. I welcome you to this episode. Today, we will talk about the yogic anatomy. And to talk to us, we are grateful to have with us today, Chase Boissart. Chase is a yoga teacher and therapist and has been studying yoga for over 3 decades now. He has studied with his guru, TKV Deshikachar, son of T. Krishnamacharya, who is often referred to as the father of modern yoga, for majority of that time. Altogether, he spent more than 4 years in Chennai, India, studying a wide range of yoga and yoga therapy topics with Sri Deshikachar and the teachers at the Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandiram in the Vini Yoga tradition. He spent 6 years at the Healing Yoga Foundation in San Francisco as Director of Education and Yoga Therapy. In 2013, he founded the Yoga Well Institute in Mill Valley, California, where he continues his mission of teaching yoga philosophy, therapy, and his insights on Eastern versus Western models of health and disease. So a very warm welcome to you, Chase. We are really glad to have you join us.
Thank you, Shruti. It's very nice to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with just our curiosity to know a little bit more about your life journey and what took you to yoga and just how has been your path of spiritual learning?
Well, I was I was born at a very young age, and so my journey with yoga really began in the university. And I was a philosophy major, and I got very interested in the question of why am I here, and that was really in response to difficulties in university and feeling alienated and feeling like, how does all of this work and what am I trying to do? And I looked in Western philosophy for that. And what I really found is that the descriptive elements are very well presented. You read the whole book, it says, this is why you're screwed. And then the book ends and you go, What do I do about it? So I had the opportunity to study abroad as part of the university program. And one of the courses was taught by Mr. TKV Deshikachar. And my introduction to yoga was really this very slight, very humble, so warm, such a lovely man coming to we went to his house twice a week, he unfurled, okay, here's who you are, and here's what your relationship to the world is, and here's how it works. And for me, the key piece was, and this is what to do about it. It wasn't only a descriptive element of here's how the world functions, but it was also a prescriptive, and this is what you do about it. You know, put your attention here, breathe like this, move in these ways, et cetera. Make these efforts, release those things. It was, yoga has such a fantastic system for helping someone to really understand who they are and why they're on the planet, and to really then go about and actuate that. I sat in the class, just couldn't believe my luck. And, you know, One does take some side journeys in life, but essentially from that moment forth, this has been the pursuit of my life.
That's wonderful you paid attention to that question, because most of us only pay attention when we are hitting our midlife crisis. So I'm really glad that people like you take it upon yourself to pursue it, get go. So that's
I think that you're hitting on something very important, which is that really yoga requires a releasing of the ego, and we're only really willing to do that once we've bumped up against the limitations of it. And I think what I see a lot in my work, which is which I would call Vinny Yoga, following what Mr. Deshgachar called it, is that the people who are really able to do something with it are the ones who have have figuratively been kicked in the teeth. People who are facing some kind of situation in their life, be it health or relationship or financial or societal or whatnot, where the limitations of their own actualization are really have been experienced, and they're bumping up against the wall. I tried to make the relationship work and we're still getting divorced, or I did so well with the business and now it's going great, but I couldn't feel care less about it. Or, you know, I did so much with the business and now it's bankrupt. Or, you know, it's only when you bump up against the limitations of your own agency that these teachings really, really matter. And I like to say that yoga is not a recipe for society, fixing the ills of society, because it requires the practitioner to do the work. You have to be willing to actually look at yourself and say, oh, I've been so arrogant, or oh, I've been such a jerk. And, you know, to actually be willing to see that is that takes something. What I see is a general sort of arc of yoga practice is people come in, the yoga makes them feel much better. If it's real yoga, they're starting to come out, etc. And then at some point, you know, real yoga turns on self-awareness, and we start to see things about ourselves that we don't really like that much. And, you know, that's where people quit, they go do taiji, or they, oh, this yoga is not for me. I thought it was good, but, you know, now not so much, you know. But if you're facing something where you're forced to admit the limits of your own abilities, then actually being shown your limitations is very, it's very liberating. Or it has the potential for that.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is we have to be willing to undergo that metamorphosis, right? Like really emerge as a new person and, you know, be not only willing for that, I feel like be inspired for that goal. Great. Thank you for sharing that. So moving on a little bit more towards today's topic. Let's start with what are the basic principles of how yoga views our body, right? And how does it differ from modern day science? Because I think it's pretty clear to all of us that it's quite poles apart, maybe.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that has happened in the last, say, 500 or 600 years or longer, and it's really a result of the colonialization of the world by Western powers, is that there has been a hierarchy created around the ways that we understand the world. So how that shows up in something like yoga is that for several thousand years, yoga was developed in concert with Indian understandings of how the human system functions. And, you know, India has extremely advanced anatomies. You know, if we look at something like Ayurveda or Siddha medicines, you know, their understanding of the way that the human system functions in some ways is still way beyond even modern medicine nowadays. And yet somehow those anatomies have been, I don't want to say rejected, but they have been definitely substituted, at least in the West, for modern allopathic anatomies as the foundation of how the body and the mind and emotions, etc., work. So, you know, yoga has developed for at least 2,000 years along Indian knowledge systems. So if we are going to talk about how does yoga work, I think we have to start and remain with these Indian anatomies. And one of the things that's happening, and it's really continues unabated, and it is really problematic in my opinion, is that there's so much emphasis in modern yoga trying to explain the neuroscience or the allopathic understandings, you know, the vagus nerve or this or that, about why yoga works. And I think that's unfortunate. You know, yoga works, and there are anatomies that explain it, which are Indian. And so if we take the time to study those anatomies and see the way that they're functioning, how yoga works, it's quite evident. And in fact, we're no longer trying to piece together, well, you know, stretching does this, and breathing does that, and attention does this other thing, and sound fits in here amongst these. It's like we already have a coherent model. Mm-hmm. You know, body, breath, attention, behavior, emotions, spirit. And they operate together. When one shifts, all those others change. And we have actual, we have predictable ways of seeing how things are changing. And we have ways of talking about those shifts. And to me, that this is really a fundamental thing that needs to be addressed. So how does it differ from modern science? Well, I think there's two fundamental things. The first one is that in modern science, the material facts are all the facts. And in what that means is that whatever can be measured in a material sense is all there is. And yoga starts out with the proposition that you are a spiritual being that has come into taken a material form. Therefore, what it's saying is consciousness is the primary foundation of being, and that consciousness exists outside of this material structure. Mm-hmm. So right there, we start the starting point between yoga and allopathic medicine or modern science is different, because in yoga, you are a spiritual being having a human experience or a tree experience or a bug experience or a fish experience. Whereas in modern science, the ideas of consciousness are supposed to be generated by materiality, you know, from a yoga perspective. So this is one of the, this is the main starting point that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Then the second point that I think is really important to recognize is that in at least in modern science, a lot of modern medicine is third person. You go and you get a scan, you go get a blood test. The doctor is not so much talking with you and understanding your symptoms and what is, although, you know, that's still, some of that still remains. But the doctor is really more interested in, well, what do your blood tests show, and what's on the MRI, or what's the X-ray show, etc. Whereas yoga is first person medicine. The fundamental starting point is experience. Mm. And experience has qualities. You can say a hot, cold, or moving, stable, or, you know, just to name some of them. But experience has qualities, and the experience of those qualities is what we're working with and what tells us what medicine to use with the person. So I think those are two really important foundational differences.
Right. I think what you're saying with your second point is modern medicine or the allopathic medicine is more objective. It treats just your markers, what, you know, that the tests throw up, but yoga is more subjective and it's treating the person as a whole. And mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I hear.
I think that there's something very accurate in what you're saying, and even then, I don't like the objective subjective terminology, because even in the quote objective, well, let's read your markers, etc., you still have the subjectiveness of the doctor reading that.
Sure.
And are these levels important or not, or etc., like that, etc.
And I think it seems to me that mind is an integral component too, like, because this reminds me of the word for good health in Sanskrit, which is swast, which is sw and stha. So when you still yourself, that's when you're healthy. So I think that probably is also, from my perspective, a different take or an approach towards health. And yes, we are gonna, let's talk a little bit more about it.
I think that what you're saying is really an important thing. And, for a Western audience, at least, sva has this idea of self, mm-hmm. own, stha to us, to stay or to remain or to stand, right? And so health is remaining in yourself. And that can be so many different things. Like, I'm able to say, walk upstairs on my own, or I'm able to cook for myself, or I'm able to function in my own life, etc. But it, also on a deeper level, we can say that health is I'm able to be me. I'm able to recognize my authenticity and to really remain in that and operate from that, no matter who I'm interacting with or whatnot. And to have that as a foundation of health is it looks like that's really missing in a lot of modern medicine, where health is defined as, well, your tests are fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people, I mean we all know, everybody has had the experience of being off and going to the doctor and doing the tests, and they tell you, you're fine. And you're like, I'm not fine. something is off. And, I need some help. And, this is my swastika. is not there. And I think that yoga and, you know, also Ayurveda or Siddha medicine, et cetera, that we have such wonderful tools for figuring that out and establishing that at such a much earlier stage in the process. And I think that those are really, really important values and advantages of yoga as a system. Yeah.
Got it. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about the yogic model of anatomy, right? So that's where the koshas come in, the panch koshas. So what is this word kosha, and what do the panch koshas refer to?
Yeah.
It's
a great question. So the text is, the core text is the Taittiriya Upanishad. And the word that's used there is panchamaya. The word kosha is not actually in that, the source text.
Oh.
Kosha is something that has come as a common, in a commentary, much, much later, something like 11th or 12th century CE.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental concept of panchamaya is that the human system is a whole and therefore indivisible. Like you can't remove the head from the rest of the body, or you know, you have the body will not continue, etc. You cannot remove the breathing from the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot remove the emotions, etc. But at the same time, there is, it's very evident that the body has, or that our organism has different aspects. And you can talk about those aspects as being differentiable. So for instance, you know, breath is, and breathing are clearly different from body, even though they're intrinsically interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with mind, or, you know, and English is such a poverty-stricken language when it comes to internal experiences. So, you know, we don't have many words for mind. It's psyche, is not much to say there. So we're forced to use the same word, whereas in Sanskrit, you have a much, much greater and richer vocabulary to describe different aspects of it. So we can say attention and the functioning of our mind in terms of the way that we've learned something and how we have how we continue to be present to something is differentiable from, say, our communication style or the perception that we have, etc. And even further is differentiable from our emotions. So Panchamaya model comes from the Taittiriya Upanishad. And in the Taittiriya Upanishad, each of the five, pancha means five, and maya means something that is all-pervading. So each of the five are presented as having five additional parts. And the five additional parts are in the form of a bird. So there's a head, two wings, a trunk, and a tail. And the metaphor of that is that a bird, when it is healthy in every respect, it can go anywhere. In other words, it's liberated, right? It can move anywhere in space. But if a wing is broken, then it can't go anywhere. Or if the tail is too large, then it can't go anywhere, or, you know, something like this. So, you know, we don't see peacocks making large migrations, et cetera, right? Because the tail is too large. So, what Panchamaya is presenting is that in order for there truly to be health, or to be freedom or liberation, is that on each of these levels, body, breath, or you can say physiology, or and the energy, attention, behavior, emotion, on each of these five levels, that we can then differentiate them into five different parts. And you can start to say that, well, for instance, that on the emotional level, there is a head which sets the direction for the person on their emotional level. And if the person, if there's something wrong with that aspect of their emotions, then it's very likely that on an emotional level, they'll be having difficulties. And then you can say, but also there's two wings on the emotional level. And if something is wrong with one of the wings, then on the emotional level, that person will be having difficulties. And the same with tail, trunk, et cetera. So we can look at body, breath, attention, mind, behavior, and emotions. And we can even go further and say, oh, on each one of these levels.
Sorry, let me interrupt you. We would love to hear the five, the five koshas, the Sanskrit words for them. We would love to hear that too.
Sure. So you got Annamaya is, the everywhere that is made out of food. Anna, mm-hmm. Right? So Anna. And you know, this word Anna is so interesting. An plus na. So an is to nourish, and na is not, right? So things that you take in will either nourish you or not, right? So there's a whole way that we can think about what we eat and how we eat it and all of these things that they set us up for health or not. And then you have the pranamaya, right? Pranamaya. So prana is, such an interesting word. It means the vitality, the electricity, if you will, the energy that is the foundation for all functioning in our system. It also means breath, right? So you can say in some ways, annamaya is the anatomy and pranamaya is the physiology. So it's one thing to have a liver or a joint, mm-hmm. but it's another thing if the liver or the joint is functioning in a way that's off, right? Manomaya. Manomaya gives you the maya of the mind. And this
so
one
is the mind.
Yeah. Manas, in this case, manas is the mind. You know, manas has a word typically means the has something to do with the analyzing of sensory information and the then construction of objects in the mind. So manas, manomaya, is really the portion of the mind that deals with the sensory inputs and is creating creating the world again in our mind as something that we can relate to, etc. Then you get Vijnanamaya, which is what is specific and individual to a person. So jnana is our knowing, our understanding, and V stands for is a contraction of vishesha, meaning special. So Vijnanamaya is what is really a person's individuality. And the bird pieces on here are very interesting. The head is faith, shraddha, how someone is, how much do they trust, or are they willing to believe? And then the right wing is Rtam, and the left wing is Satyam. And Rtam, in this context, means the perception of something and the truth as it is, and satyam is the truth as it can be communicated. So the wings of the bird of a person on their individuality level, their behavior, their personality, etc. The wings are really their how they perceive and how they communicate. And we can, you know, you can really see that people have different communication styles, and sometimes a communication style creates a huge obstacle in someone's life, or a perceptual a way of perceiving things. You know, I'm always perceiving things in an antagonistic way. That sets up every situation that the person goes into in a problematic way. So like through yoga, we have these tools that we can really specifically address the person's rutam on their vijnanamaya level, or the satyam on their vijnanamaya dimension. And, you know.
This is very fascinating for me. So thank you, because I have observed exactly what you say, that, you know, some people just perceive a situation so differently. Maybe it's too positive, maybe it's too negative, but it's very different from the norm or an average person, and how it changes just their course of life in many different ways. And what you're saying is yoga gives you that access to actually maybe even not just understand, but maybe even modify this perception framework.
That's right. So